Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Zvochim Daf Kuf Tes Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. In our previous shiur, we had seen a Tanaic source that mentioned that prior to the setting up of the Mishkan, there were numerous options open as to what would be fit to be brought as a korban. Amongst the things that were mentioned were zechorim nekevis tamimin ubali mumin. In the Gemara that we saw at the conclusion of our previous shiur, at the top of this daf of Kuf Tezayin, the Gemara mentioned that this section of the Brisa is coming to exclude as being valid an animal that is missing a limb. That's called Mechusar Aver. So picking up the Gemara from the top of the page, we'll just read another line or two that we really read in our previous shiur as well. We're opening up with a quote from the Brisa that was on Kuf Tes Vav Amid Beis. In order to find where this quote is coming from, we have provided a double star that you can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. You see a double star with an indication that this is from Kuf Tes Vav Amid Beis. And if you glance back to Kuf Tes Vav Amid Beis, you'll notice a double star opposite the line where this quote is coming from. The top line of Kuf Tes Zayin says, Zechorim unikevus tamimin ubalei mumin. Skipping the parentheses section, Lafuke mechusar aver delo. The role of the Brisa is to tell us that one thing is not allowed, and that's an animal that has a limb missing. That even though it may be a kosher variety animal, nevertheless, if it's missing a limb, it's not acceptable, it was never acceptable to be brought as a sacrifice. In fact, we should bear in mind that we cited as a source for this wide range of acceptable creatures from Noach. Therefore, the concept of missing limb animals being unacceptable would also have to have its roots, so to speak, in Noach. So the Gemara continues and says, "De Omar Rebbe Lozer, minayin luchsur eber she'nesar livnei Noach." From where do we know that an animal missing a limb was prohibited to the Bnei Noach from being suitable as a sacrifice? Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk says, Pasuk concerning animals that Noach was commanded to bring into his special boat, or the ark, as is sometimes referred to, Umikol hachai mikol basar. That's the Pasuk. Omra Torah, Have behema, bring into your ark animals, shechayin roshe evoren shelah, that its limbs are intact. The Rashi adds a dimension to this. On the second narrow line, Shechayin Roshei Voren, V'loma li lazurei olayhu. Why is there a need to warn Noach concerning these? Ilav mishum hakrova shikrav mehem b'tzeis min ha'teva. If not for the anticipated offering of sacrifices that Noach would eventually do when he left the ark. So from this pasuk, umikol achai mikol basar, we see that missing limb animals are excluded. Before we go any further in our sugya, let's glance at some of the notes we have on the outside margin. We have a nosei, a topic heading, which says, afalpi debal mum kosher livnei noach, even though an animal with a blemish is acceptable as a sacrifice, b'mosayim, on their private altars. B'nei Noach is a term that includes mankind, that even though in general for mankind other than the Jews, private altars are acceptable when offerings are made to the Almighty, and we will accept even blemished animals to be brought by the B'nei Noach as sacrifices. Nevertheless, mechutzer eiver posul lehem, an animal with a missing limb is unacceptable. The triangles that you see in the next several lines will be appearing in a flip-flop fashion, and under our mivneh structural note in the outside margin, we see a triangle featured, and in parentheses, ma'akav. This is an attempt on our part to keep track of the back-and-forth discussion. So with the point facing up, the triangles will represent kushios, their questions or challenges. Ulai haposuk dehuva lemait muchusar eiver bo lemait trefa. Maybe the posuk that was brought to exclude missing limb is really brought to exclude a trefa. A trefa is an animal that has an organ deficiency or some other type of problem, usually involving a hole in vital organs or other type matters. There is a list of trefos in Maseches Chulin, but for our purposes, trefa represents one type of realm, and missing limb represents another realm, a realm of problem or deficiency. So what the Gemara will be asking is, maybe the pasuk that you thought was brought to exclude Rosh Eivorin, maybe its role is to exclude as acceptable a trefa. Turning now to the Gemara, or actually before the Gemara, we also should continue our note where we see the triangle flipped over with the point facing down. Tshuvos, responses. Miut trefa nilmad mimokom acher. As far as the need to exclude a trefa for being acceptable as a sacrifice, that will be accomplished by another source. We will see lachyos zera or itoch with you. Psukim that will appear later in the Gemara. So at this juncture, we see that the Gemara will attempt to derail the Mikol Achai as a source for missing limb, but Mikol Achai will be reinstated as a source for missing limb, and as far as the exclusion of a trefa, that will be accomplished by citing other psukim. Turning to the Gemara, Vedilma, maybe Mimute trefa, maybe the pasuk of Mikol Achai and Mikol Basar is to exclude a trefa. The Gemara says, Hahu, the exclusion of a trefa is milachyos zera nafka. The posuk says that he's supposed to bring animals, lachyos zera, which means to procreate. And the assumption is that a trefa, an animal suffering from this type of trefa deficiency, is incapable of procreation. Ha nicha, this will work out that we can exclude a trefa from lachyos zera lemandomar trefa nioledes, according to the opinion that holds that a trefa is incapable of procreation. Elo lemandomar trefa nioledes ma'iko lemeimar. But if you hold that a trefa does bear children, then what are you to say? Namely, maybe lachyos zera will not be sufficient for excluding a trefa, because a trefa, according to this opinion, is yoledes. So I'll need to fall back onto kol hachai. And if I use the pasuk of kol hachai for excluding a trefa, what will be my source for mechusar eiver, for missing limb? The Gemara answers, ho omar kra, but there is another pasuk that says, itcha bedoymin loch, that you are to bring into the teva animals that are like you, which would appear to mean not a trefa. The Gemara asks, well, v'dilma Noach gufei trefa havi? Maybe Noach himself was a trefa. Someone says, no, Noach wasn't a trefa, because tumim ksiv bei. Tumim means complete. Complete meaning no holes, not a trefa. Noach was described as tumim. The Gemara asks, well, v'dilma tumim midrachav? Maybe tumim is not a physiological description, but rather a moral statement, that he was tumim midrachav, that his ways, his behavior, was one of wholesomeness, but he himself was a trefa. The Gemara says, well, as far as wholesomeness is concerned, tzadik ksiv bei. You have Noach his ways being described as wholesome by the term tzaddik. Therefore, tumim would exclude trefa. The Gemara says, but still, not necessarily. V'dilma tumim v'drachav, tzaddik b'maisav. There are two aspects of personality description over here. Tumim b'drachav would be a description of his personality, being someone with patience and long suffering, and tzaddik is a person who's scrupulous in his actions. But as far as physically concerned, Noach maybe was a trefa, and therefore I couldn't fall back on itcha to exclude a trefa. The Gemara responds, "E sakadaitoch de Noach gufe trefa havi." If you were to think that Noach himself was in fact a trefa, and the pasuk is then saying, "Bring into the teva animals like you." So, mi ka'amar le Noach de kavosech ayil shlemim lo tayil. Could you imagine that the Kodesh Baruch Hu is telling Noach, "Bring in specifically things like you, like a, namely a trefa, but healthy animals. Don't bring in." Very unlikely. So what must be? It must be that itcha means like you who is healthy. Now that we have itcha to serve as the exclusion of trefa. So that's the role of trefa, to exclude. That's the role of itcha, that excludes a trefa. So then, lachyos zera lama li. What's the role of lachyos zera? What role will that pasuk fulfill? The Gemara answers, mahu detema itcha litzavso the alma afilu zokein afilu saris. I might have thought that the word itcha teaches me simply bring in animals, albeit not a trefa, bring in healthful animals, healthy animals that are non-trefas, that are like you, but the animals are there to keep you company, even if the animal happens to be old or sterile. Even if it's old or sterile, it's not a trefa, but that might have been sufficient to bring in kamash malon. Therefore, I need the pasuk of lach yozera that it's not enough that the animals that are brought in are healthy, meaning non-trefas, but they also must be capable of procreation. As you can see, we have another house marking, Omar Mar. This represents a quote from the source on Kuf Tez Vav Amid Beis, and in order to help you find where this is coming from, we have a little star here with a Kuf Tez Vav Amid Beis indicator. If you scan back to Kuf Tez Vav Amid Beis, and you find a singular star with a Kuf Tez Zayin indicator next to it, you will see where this is coming from. And in fact, you can see on the last narrow line of the previous Amid where this source is, where this quote is from. Omar Mar, Tahirim Avoloi Temein. It would appear that this halacha of unkosher bright animals are excluded is from the pasuk that we found by Noach, which said, Mikol habehemo ha-tahoira, that we saw at the bottom of Kuf Tezvav Amid Beis. The Gemara asks, Umi havu tameim u-tahoirin bahi shaita? Was there a concept of kosher variety and non-kosher variety animals at that point in time, at the time of Noach? That whole breakdown or categorizing of animals wasn't known until the Torah was given. So what does the pasuk mean when it says Mikol habehemo ha-tahoira? Before we go further, we have a topic heading in the outside margin to say, Ha dichtiv etzel Noach Mikol habehemo ha-tahoira Hainu Mikol oison shelo nevda bohen avera. The pasuk is really saying from all animals that were not involved with immorality. So the question is, so how would Noach know which animals were and were not involved? Mino yodu. And the Gemara will provide shtei tshuvos, two answers. The Gemara continues. Omar Rav Shmuel bar Nachman Rabbi Yonasan. The intention of the pasuk when it says Mikol Beima Torah is as follows. Me oison shelo nevda bohen avera. from animals that were not used in immorality. The Gemara asks, Mino havu yadi, from where did they know? Number one, first of two answers, Kidur of Chisda, based on his teaching, the Omar of Chisda, Heviron lifnei hateva. The animals that were candidates to be brought into the teva were passed in front of the ark beforehand. Kol shateva koltosan biyadua shutor. Any animal that was arrested or withheld by the ark, or that was gathered in by the ark, biyadua shehu Torah, tahor, that it was not involved with immorality. Ein hateva koltosan, if the animal was not restrained by the teva, then biyadua shehein tamei, and that's a sign that they were involved with immorality, and that the ark wasn't going to receive them. Rabbi Avo Omar, Omar Kro, v'haboim zochar unikeva. Rabbi Avo says that in order to determine which animals were of acceptable quality, the pasuk says they were haboim zochar unikeva, haboim meleim, animals that came on their own. So if they came on their own, that would show that those were acceptable. According to the Rashi, Rabbi Avo is saying more than what we explain. Haboyin Melehin, let us glance at the Rashi. You'll find him in the upper part of the page. V'chol oisen shebo el hateva, all those animals that came to the teva, me'elehin bo, they came on their own. That, in and of itself, might explain the ones that were not involved with immorality. However, Ubohen Hikir, through those that came on their own, he also recognized the following. Oisim Shibo Shiva Shiva, those that came in groups of seven, Yoda Shehen Torah, he knew those are the kosher variety animals. The Shibo Shnayim Shnayim, those that came in pairs of two, Shehein Temein. Those are the unkosher variety animals. Omar Mar. Once again, we have a quote from that which was mentioned earlier. Vakol Korvu Olos. That means until the Mishkan was set up, all sacrifices that were brought were offered as Ola sacrifices. Oilois in shlomim loy. The suggestion here is not shlomim. In other words, olos, yes, but shlomim sacrifices were not offered prior to the setting up of the Mishkan. The Gemara asks, v'hoksiv, but it says by Sinai, v'yizbechu zvochim shlomim l'ashem porim. And Sinai was before the Mishkan. Elo emo hakol korvu oilois ushlomim. So rather, we should understand that everything, all the sacrifices that were offered, were olos and shlomim. The Gemara asks, but we have a source that says to the contrary, v'hatanyo avol shlomim loy ki'im olos. Shlomim were not offered, only olos. Olos in shlomim lo. So we have a source that would seem to be problematic, especially in light of the pasuk that says two lines above, "Vayizbehu zvachim shlomim." So the Gemara answers, "Kema de Omar lo korvu shlomim livnei noyach." The Omar, the Itmar, Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Yosef Chanina, Chad Omar korvu shlomim livnei noach, v'Chad Omar lo korvu shlomim livnei noach. This source that says, "Avol shlomim lo ki'im oilois." This would conform to the opinion that holds that B'nai Noyach do not have as an option any korban other than a korban oila. Man de Omar, my taimo de man de Omar korvu shlomim livnei Noach. What's the basis of the opinion that says that shlomim were offered by B'nai Noach? Dichtiv. The pasuk says, the hevel hevi gam hu mi bechoros tzoynoi u mechel vehen. Hevel, the son of Odom Arishon, brought a sacrifice, and he brought from the firstborn of his sheep, umechel vehen. Ezu davar shechelbo korev legabi mizbech ve'en kulo korev legabi mizbech. What kind of sacrifice is it that only the chevev, which is part of the innards of the animal, that only that is put on the altar, but the rest of it is not put on the altar? Heve omer zeh shlamim. That is a korban shlamim. So what do we see? We see that way before Matan Torah, way back to the beginning of time, shlamim were offered. My time, Adam Adam, or Lo Korvu Shlomim Bnei Noach? What's the basis of the opinion that says that Shlomim were not offered by Bnei Noach? Dechtiv, Uri Tzofon Uvoi Temon. And we explain, Tisnayer Umo Shemaseh B'Tzofon. There shall be removed the Gentiles whose practices are in the Tzafon. Tzafon is a reference to the northern half of the Azor of the Beis HaMikdash. The Ola sacrifice was slaughtered in the Tzafon. So the Bnei Noach, the Ummah, the nation, the Bnei Noach, are described as those whose sacrifices are done in the Tzafon, namely in the northern part, which is a reference, a hint to a Korban Ola. The Tavoy Ummah Shemaseh Batsafon Ubadaro, and there shall replace them the nation of Israel, whose sacrificial activities take place not only in the north, namely Olos, but also in the south, the southern part of the Azara, where they offer Shlomim, where Shlomim sacrifices are able to be slaughtered. So from this pasuk, we see that the Bnei Noach are described as Tzafon, as limited to Ola. Umar nami hoksiv umechel vehen. The Mad Omar that says that Bnei Noach did not offer shlomim, but what about the pasuk we saw above by Hevel, the word chel vehen, which indicated that they did offer shlomim. So the Mad Omar that says that they did not explains mi shmanehem didhu. Chel vehen means from the fat ones, from the choice ones, not the way we explained before through an inference, chelev yes and the rest of the meat no, but rather the Bnei Noach, in this case Hevel, offered from the choice ones, choice of his animals, but they were to be offered as an Ola. Before we go further, we see a crown form and we want to know what its role is. We glance to the side of the Gemara of the Mivneh, Hoksiv. Where this appears, they will represent Kushios Amada Omar de Lo Kervu Shlomim Livnei Noach. That represents questions on the opinion that holds that Shlomim were not offered by the Bnei Noach. Hagmur Mavia Psukim de Mehem Mashma de Gam Bnei Noach Hikrivu Shlomim. The Gemara will be bringing Psukim that indicate that Bnei Noach did offer Shlomim. So we already saw one of them, and we answered it, that this Pasukim Chavehem is not including Shlomim, but rather is a reference to the choice animals. Umar Nami Hoksiv Uri Tzafon, the Mandomar that holds Bnei Noach do bring Shlomim. What does he do with the Pasuk that describes the Bnei Noach as Uri Tzafon, meaning limited to Olos? The Gemara says, Hahu Bekibutz Golios Hu Dichtiv. The Pasuk is a reference to the ingathering of the exiles, the ingathering of the exiled Jews in the future, and is not a reference or a description of the Gentiles and their sacrifices. Rashi explains a little more, Bekibus Golius, Fahochi Komar, Uri Ruach Svainis, Uboi Ruach Dremis, Lekabetz Golius, and Mefuzoros Bochem. The northern regions should become aroused, and the southern regions should become aroused to assist in the ingathering of the Jews that are scattered there. Question, V'hoksiv. We have a posuk that is from before Matan Torah, when everyone is classified as a Ben Noach, and it says, V'yomer Moshe. Moshe says to Paro, Gam atah titein biyodenu, zvachim v'olos v'sinu l'Hashem Elokeinu. once again, even though Moshe's name appears here, he's classified at this point, since we're dealing with the period of time when they were still in Egypt, prior to Matan Torah, everyone, even what we call the Jewish people, were categorized as Bnei Noach. And he's telling Paro that you will give us Zvochim and Olos. And the assumption right now is Zvochim is a reference to Shlomim. The opinion that says Bnei Noach were limited to Olos responds, Zvochim la'achila. The word Zvochim is a Loshon of Shechting and not a Loshon of Shlomim. It's not an expression indicating a specific type of Korban, but rather the Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to him, you will give us animals to sacrifice, or to let us say to slaughter and to eat, that's personal consumption and not sacrificial at all. The olos lahakrava, and the olos, they will be for sacrificial purposes. So this answer is consistent with the opinion that we're trying to defend, that the Bnei Noach offered as sacrifices only olos. And the presence of the word zvochim is a lashon of shechita, simple slaughtering in anticipation of personal eating, but not sacrificial in nature. Question: V'haksiv, vayikach Yisroi choisin Moshe oilu zvochim. Yisroi was a ben Noach, and it says that he offered an ola and zvochim. The zvochim is an indication of a shlomim. The Gemara answers, "Hahu li'achar matan Torah hu dichtiv." That pasuk is after matan Torah, and as such, we now have the Jewish people separated and distinguished from the Gentiles, and therefore shlomim are acceptable. Ha nichal madamar yisro achar matan Torah hoya. This explanation works out according to the opinion that holds that Yisro historically was after the giving of the Torah. But according to the opinion that holds that Yisro was before Matan Torah, how is he going to explain the pasuk that indicates that Yisro brought, in addition to Olos, Shlomim? If we skip the bracketed section for a moment, Lamanda Omar Yisro Kodem Matan Torah Hoya, according to the opinion that Yisro was in fact before Matan Torah, he also holds Kosova Shlomim Hikrivu Bnei Noach. He will say that Bnei Noach were entitled to offer Shlomim. And these two opinions we saw at the beginning of the wide lines of this Gemara, the second wide line, we had featured Rebbe Lozer and Rebbe Yossi, Rebbe Chanina, one holding that Kervu Shlomim Bnei Noach, and the other one holding that Bnei Noach were limited to Olos. And the Gemara here is simply pointing out that if you hold that Yisro was before Matan Torah, you are also holding from the idea that Bnei Noach were entitled to offer Shlomim. The bracketed section that we skipped, we will go over now, but you can see the reason for the skipping was that we raised the question of, according to the Mada Omar, that Yisro was before Matan Torah, and therefore we see Bnei Noach offering Shlomim. The answer to that is that, and that's after the brackets, according to the Mada Omar, that Yisro was in fact before Matan Torah, Bnei Noach were entitled to offer Shlomim. In the brackets, the Gemara will deal with this issue, or these deas, concerning the time of Yisro, the time of his coming. The Itmar b'nei Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Chad Omar, one opinion holds Yisro kodem Matan Torah, that Yisro's coming to the Jewish people was prior to the giving of the Torah, v'chad Omar Yisro achar Matan Torah hoya. The other opinion holds that Yisro came after the giving of the Torah. Tanoi, the issue of Yisro before or after Matan Torah, the issue of his coming to join the Jewish people, is a machlokes tanoim. We now see a long Tanaic source, in which we also have featured some markings in the outside margin of the Gemara. You notice the Nosei Mivneh heading. the double underline, and diamond with a colored in tip. Machlokes Tanoim, Ma Shoma Yisroi. What is it that Yisroel heard, Shigoram Loi Lovo Yisroel Bamidbar, that caused him to leave Midian to come to join the Jews in the desert? Memela Bias Yisroel Kedem O Achar Matan Torah, Shonui B'machlokes Tanoim. Depending on what he heard, we will also point out that each opinion will represent a different side, or amongst the different opinions, you'll see the two sides of this issue. Was he before or after Matan Torah? So the source begins, and you can see it's a rather long source. It goes till the bottom line. Vayishma Yisroi Choyei Midran. The pasuk at the beginning of Parshas Yisro says that Yisro heard. Ma Shmua Shoma Ubov in his Gayer. What is it that he heard that motivated him to come and convert? Convert to Judaism. Rabbi Yeshua, as the first of several opinions, Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Milchemes Amalek, Shoma Ubo. He heard of the war that the Amalekites waged against the Jews. Shoma, we said that he, Milchemes Amalek, Shoma Ubo, he heard about that war, and that motivated him to come. Now, how does Rabbi Yeshua know that Yisro's motivation to come was hearing of the Jewish victory in that battle? Shaharei Ksiv B'tzido. Because right before the pasuk that opens Parshas Yisro, it says at the end of Parshas B'shalach, Vayachlo Yeshua es Amalek ves Amol lefi Chorev, that Yeshua weakened defeated Amalek and its nation. Rabbi Lozer Amaldoi Omer, Matan Torah Shoma Uba. Kishenitno Torah Yisrael. You'll ask, how could Yisrael, who was in Midian, have heard about Matan Torah? Well, it's explained. Kishenitno Torah Yisrael, when the Torah was given, the sound, the voice of the Matan Torah, the could very well be a reference to the divine revelation where the Kodesh Baruch Hu himself announced the first two Dibrois of the Aseret Dibrois that was heard around the world. All of the kings of the peoples of the world were overtaken with fear in their palaces. The Omru Shira, and they broke out with song. Shnemar Ubehecholoi Kuloi Oimer Kovoid. In their chambers, the chambers of each king of the world, they broke forth with honor and song in honor of the Almighty. Niskapsu Kulan Etzel Bilam Arasha. Then these kings came to the prophet Bilam, the evil Bilam, the Amrulo. And you'll see what the squiggle underlines, our attempt through the markings to keep track of the discussion back and forth between Bilam and these kings. So they came and said to him, Ma Kul Hamon Asher Shamanu. What is the voice, the tumultuous noise that we are hearing? Shemo Mabul Bo Li'olam. Maybe a flood is coming upon the world. Shnemar Hashem Lamabul Yoshav. Where it seems that the God is coming back to a flood. Omar Lohem Vayeshev Hashem Melech Li'olam. He responds and says, well, the pasuk also says this. Kvar Nishba Kodesh Baruch Hu She'enoi Mevi Mabul Li'olam. The pasuk says that God will reign over his world forever. So he is thereby declaring that he's going to maintain a world, and namely not inundate it, in order to rule over it. Amulo, so they responded, Mabul Shomayim Eino Mevi Avol Mabul Shel Eish Mevi Shenemar Ki Bo Eish Hashem Nishpat. They raised their doubts and said, maybe a flood of water he won't bring, but a flood of fire he will bring. And the pasuk says that God judges through fire. Amalem kvar nishba she'eno mevi mabul kol iker. He already swore that he won't bring any form of inundation. Shenemar v'lo yeh oid mabul l'shaches. the Shachais Kol Basar. There will be no more floods to destroy all creatures. Eloma Kol Hamon Azesh Shamanu. So the kings asked Bilam, so what's the tumult that we are experiencing? Amar Lahem, Bilam answers, Chemdo Toivo Yesh Lo Beveis Ginozov, that the Almighty had in his treasure house a very precious item. Shoyse Ginuza Etzlo, 974 Doirois Kodem Shenivra Ha'olam. This precious item that he had in his storehouse, in his treasury, he had for 974 generations before the world was created. And it might be noted that from Odom Arishon, from the point of world creation until Matan Torah, there were another 26 generations, 10 between Odom and Noach, and between Noach and Avram, another 10, and from Avram till Moshe Rabbeinu, 6 generations, a total of 26. 26 plus 9, 74 is 1,000 generations before the creation of the world. 1,000 generations before Matan Torah, that is. Once again, 1,000 generations before the giving of the Torah was put into God's treasury. Ubikesh litno levonov. And now, the tumult that you are hearing is his desire to give it, the Torah, to his children. Shenemar Hashem oiz lamo yitain. The term oiz is a reference to strength. The strength of the Jewish people is the Torah. Well, when they heard that, Miad Posukum V'Omru, they all broke forth and said, Hashem Yevorech Es Amoi Bashalom, then the Almighty should bless his nation with peace. Rabbi Lozer Omer, Kriyas Yamsuf Shoma Uba. What did Yisrael hear? The splitting, he heard of the splitting of the Yamsuf, the sea, that the Jews experienced upon their departure from Mitzrayim. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Vayikishmo kol malchei amori." The pasuk in Sefer Yeshua indicates that all the kings of the people of Canaan heard the afrochav hazoina amr l'shluchei Yeshua ki shamanu asher hovish Hashem es me yamsuf. Rachav, who was the woman that saved the spies that Yehoshua had sent into Eretz Yisrael before their entrance, she reported to the emissaries of Yehoshua that we heard of Hashem's drying out the sea, in other words, which took place upon Kriyas Yamsuf. And Yisrael as well heard of this amazing event, and that's what motivated him to come. So from all of these opinions, you see some holding that he came prior to Matan Torah, and you see the opinion of Rabbi Lozer Modoy that says that he heard of Matan Torah, hence he came after Matan Torah. The Gemara asks, regarding the psukim in Yehoshua, Maishna hosam dichtiv velohoyo bom oid ruach, that they had, after hearing about God's great miracles, they had no longer any spirit. And in the context of Rachav, it says that there was no longer any spirit in Ish, in males, men. The Gemara explains dafilu akshuye nami lo akshu, that the men had been so traumatized by what they heard about the miraculous workings of Hashem that they could no longer even experience kishui. Rashi points out at the top of filu akshuye ever letashmish, kishui is a state whereby the male can engage in procreation with the female, and his organ of procreation was incapable of reaching firmness. Kishui Ever. Umenoyoda, well, how did Rochav know that? How did she know that all the men of her generation were so shocked by what they heard that they couldn't engage in this in intimacy? So the Gemara answers, she very well knew the situation. The Omar Mor, it's taught, in the Mechilta, in the Medrash on Sefer Shmois, Ein l'cho kol sar v'nogid, there is no leader, sar, minister, or a nogid leader, shelobo al rochav azona, that didn't have relations with Rochav, who, according to this approach, seems that she practiced harlotry. So as such, she was very well aware of the state of the men folk, the customers. Omru, it's said concerning Rochav Bas Eser Shonim Hoiso, Kishiyotsu Yisrael Mi Mitzrayim, she was 10 years old when the Jews left Mitzrayim. The Zonza Kol Arboim Shonsho Yisrael Bamidbar, and for 40 years she engaged in this oldest of professions, in harlotry. Achar Nun Chamishim Shonan Ezgairo, after she reached age 50, she converted to Judaism. Omra, and she said, Yehei mocholi b'schar chevel chalon upishtim, that I should be my ways of immorality that I've experienced till now should be forgiven in honor of, or in view of the fact that I saved the emissaries that were sent by Yeshua. I saved them, I risked my life for their benefit, and specifically through the use of a rope, a window, and flax. Rashi elaborates on why the reference to these specific items. On the third line from the top, Omro Yimcholi Bishvil Chevel Pishtim V'Chalon B'Mechilta Tanya Hochi Omro. In the Mechilta, which is the name of the Medrash on Sefer Vayikra, on Sefer Shmois, it teaches as follows. She said, Ribbono Shalom B'Gemul Dvarim Chotasi, through three elements I sinned. One has to analyze on a separate level this concept of sinning with regard to Rochav. Harlotry for a non-Jew is not necessarily to be classified as a straight-out sin, unless one assumes that maybe she had been a married lady, as the Gemara in Sanhedrin suggests, that might be grounds for a problem. But we can say that in view of everything, harlotry is at least something that's not viewed positively by anybody. So she's turning to the Ribbono Shel Olam and says that, forgive my immoral lifestyle in honor of three things. Begimel Yimcholi, Bechevel Bishtim Bechalon, through these three elements, the rope, the flax, and the window. Shehoyu Menafim, originally the paramours, used to oilin elel b'chalavolim, they would climb up to her flat with ropes, derech hachalon, through a window, v'yordim, and then when they finished their preoccupation with her, they would then exit through the window. V'gam tomnosam b'pishte eitz, and she also would hide her customers from being found in flax reeds. And it's through these three elements that she actually saved the emissaries that came to her. Omar Mar, V'oivde kechovim bizman hazeh rashoim lasos kein. This as well is a quote from the source on Kuf Tez Vov Amid Beis. If one uses the arrow that we see here to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text and flips back to Kuf Tez Vov Amid Beis and finds a simple arrow with a Kuf Tez Zayin Amid Beis indicator, you will see where this quote is coming from. And in fact, it comes from the second wide line on Kuf Tez Vov Amid Beis. It said there, V'oivde kechovim bizman hazeh rashoin lasos kein. Gentiles nowadays are entitled to offer sacrifices at personal altars, at bamos. Mino hanimili detanu rabbanon. What is the source for this? So the pasuk says, in the context of shchutei chutz, the prohibition of offering sacrifices outside the Beis HaMikdash, namely offering on personal altars, it says, Daber el b'nei Yisrael. The Jews were addressed. B'nei Yisrael mitzuven al shchutei chutz, ve'ino oivik hachove mitzuven al shchutei chutz. Only Jews are restricted, are commanded against offering outside the Beis HaMikdash, but Gentiles are not restricted. So that if a Gentile wants to offer a sacrifice to the Almighty outside of the Beis HaMikdash, he is entitled to. Therefore, every non-Jew is entitled to erect his own altar, and can offer upon it that which he desires. Omer of Yankov bar Acha, Omer of Asi. Osur l'sayim v'lasos shlichuson. It is, however, forbidden for a Jew to help them during the period of time of Boma prohibition. For example, nowadays, it's offered to physically help them or to serve as their emissaries in offering a sacrifice on their behalf. Omer Rabba, l'rinu l'hu shari. However, to offer them verbal instructions, assistance, through teaching, to tell them how to do things, that a Jew is allowed to. Kiha, and before we go further, we have a point here, a little incident that is of a long nature. You can see, by glancing to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara, the word Maisa that's encircled with a vertical dashed line, indicating all of these lines form the event, or the story. Rava just mentioned that to teach Gentiles how to go about offering their sacrifices on their personal altars, a Jew is entitled to do so, to teach. Kiha de Ifra Hormiz, Ime de Shavur Malka. Ifra Hormiz, the mother of King Shapur, we're talking about, these are Gentile people, Shadra Korbana the Rava, she sent a sacrifice, or korbana in other Gemaras indicates a gift. In this case, we'll talk about a sacrifice. She sent it to Rava. Shalcha lei. She sent the following message. Askua nihalei l'shem shamayim. Offer it to the Almighty. Omeluhu Rava l'rav Safra l'rav Acha barhuna. Rava turned to Rav Safra and Rav Acha and said, Zilu v'dabru trei umi guloi, bring two young, ume are youths that are Gentile, guloi of the same age. Bring two Gentile youths of the same age, v'chazu hecha demasko yoma sirton, and find a spot that the sea cast up onto the shore mud. We're talking about a material that was not used at all for personal benefit. It's called the virgin building material. V'shaklu tzivi chadati, and take new wood as opposed to wood from broken vessels. V'afiku nura mimora chadata, and produce a fire from a new flint. The askua nihalei l'shem shemayim, and after all of this, taking the mud to form, let's say, building material that's of a new unused nature, and wood of an unused new nature, and producing a fire from a new flint, and then offer upon this structure the sacrifice l'shem shemayim. At this point, Abaye raises a question. It's a long question. You can see from the long question indicator to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, the kuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed line, indicating all of these lines form a question. Amale Abaye. Abaye asks, according to whom was Rava Makpid insistent on bringing new wood? So, it seems that he was insistent that Rava's opinion was possibly based on Rabbi Elozer ben Shammua. However, Abaye points out that Rabbi Elozer ben Shammua, when it comes to a private altar, does not seem to insist on newness with regard to the wood. At the end of the long question, you'll see there's a dashed underlining, which says, "V'hamorigim u'klei abokar li'etzim." This is a quote from a pasuk involving David HaMelech offering a sacrifice on behalf of Aravna, who was a Gentile. And we see vessels that were going to be broken down into wood to serve as firewood. And the assumption in this question is that those vessels were, well, used kalim. So we see used vessels or used wood serving as fuel for the Gentiles' sacrifice at a private altar. And therefore, why is Rava insisting on the use of new, unused wood? Let us now read it in the inside. And before we go on in the Gemara, we can also take advantage of the little topic heading that we see in the outside margin across from this point. The Nosei, the topic, Machloikas Abaye v'Rava, a controversy will arise between Abaye and Rava. Im ha'etzim shel bomas nochri, if the fuel for a Gentile's private altar, bo'inon liyois chadashim, are they required to be new? Shelohoyu b'shimush achir l'tzorech hedyot, that were not used in any other form for private purposes. So the Gemara now, on the last narrow line in the Gemara, Amale Abaye. Abaye asks, Keman, based on whom was Rava insistent on the use of the new wood? Well, Ki Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua. At first glance, it might appear that he's conforming to Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, the Sanya, Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua Omer. Ma mizbeach shishtamish boi hedyot. Just like the altar is something that is not used by a commoner. Af eitzim shishtamish boi hedyot. So too, the wood used as fuel is wood that's not used for common purposes. V'ha Abaye asks, though, v'ha moide Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua b'boma. But Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua admits or concedes that when you're dealing with a private altar, that newness is not necessary. This Sanya. And we now have a long Tanaic source, and we pointed out in our introduction that the main question is going to come from the very end of this Tanaic source, where we see fuel used for a private altar coming from vessels from Origen Uklei Boker, which we will see later on. There's a reference to different utensils used for threshing grains and other cattle-related vessels, which ostensibly are used items, and they were used or broken down into wood for fuel purposes. So from this whole discussion, we see that when it comes to a private altar, there is no insistence on newness. And therefore, why was Rava insisting on the tzivi chaneti, the new wood? And so, let us see. Desanya, Kosuv Echor Omer, the Brisa presents two psukim which seem to contradict one another. And the topic at hand has to do with the period in time where David HaMelech bought from a gentleman by the name of Aravna the area on which the Beis HaMikdash would eventually be erected. So one pasuk says, Kosov Echad Oimer, Vayitein David L'Aravna Bamo Koim Shikle Zov U'Mishkal Sheish Meos V'chulei. David paid Aravna for that spot gold, the Mishkal Sheish Meos V'chulei. Uksiv, another pasuk says, "Vayiken David es hagurin v'sabokor bekesef shkolim chamishim," that he purchased the threshing floor and the cattle for with the kesef, with silver coins, 50 of them. So the pasuk just before mentioned zohav mishkal sheshmeos, gold 600, and this pasuk says silver 50. Both psukim addressing the same event, the purchase of the area that the Beis HaMikdash would be built on. Ha-ketzat. How do you resolve these two psukim? So, approach number one. Goyve mikol shevet v'shevet chamishim. He collected 50 from each shevet, and there were 12 of them. 12 times 50 is shehen shesh meos. That equals 600. So that you thereby resolve the two psukim. One is a posuk reference to each shevet, that was the 50, and the posuk of 600 represents the total collection. Rabbi Omer, Mishum Abba Yossi ben Destoy, Rebbe, in the name of Abba Yossi, has another resolution. Bokor v'etzim umokum mizbeach b'chamishim. The cattle, the wood, and the spot on which the altar would be built, that he paid 50. V'chol abayas kulo b'sheish meos. But the rest of the area cost him 600. Rebbe Lozer ben Shamu Omer, Bokor v'etzim umokum mizbeach b'chamishim. V'chol habayas kulo b'sheish meos dichtiv. Vayomer aravne al David yikach v'yal adoni emel chatoy beinov re'e habokor le'oilo v'amorigim uklei habokor li'etzim. You see here that that Aravna, who was selling the area to David, presents to David in exchange for the money. He presents to him the cattle and the morigim and the clay boker to serve as fuel. At this point, we come to the end of our question, where we see Rebbe Lozer ben Shamua, whose name was featured with a dashed underline just three lines up from here, and the number 3, Rebbe Lozer ben Shamua, is responsible for this pshat, that the fuel used for the sacrifices that were going to be offered on this bum, on this personal altar, the fuel were the morigen and clay boker, which ostensibly are used items, they're vessels that were used. And therefore, for a private altar, there is no insistence on newness. So the question goes back to why did Rava above, where we have dashed underlined the expression tzivi chadati, why was he insisting on the use of new wood for the private altar? The Gemara answers, Rava Omar Loch, Hosam Nami Bechadati. The Morigan and the clay boker that Ravna was giving to David were in fact brand new vessels. They weren't used at all before. So, in fact, newness is insisted upon. My Morigan, at the beginning of this line, Aravna said to David, here you have the cattle and the morigen for fuel. What is the word morigen? Omra ulo mito shel turbol. The one asks, my mito shel turbol. What does that mean? Omra abaye, izo de karkiso de daishon dishoi. It's some type of implement that has the shape of a goat that has a notched bottom to it. This vessel has some weight to it as well. It's drawn over grains, and it has a notched bottom. So the notched bottom serves to thresh, to break the stalks off the grains, and to crack the shells in anticipation of the preparation of the grains for readying the grains for their eventual grinding into making them into making it into flour. Omar Abaye, Micro Abaye says, what pasuk indicates that morigen has to do with something that's notched, that crushes? The pasuk says, O ine samtich lemurig chorutz chadosh ba pifiyos. In this pasuk, you see the word morag together with chorutz. Chorutz is something that's notched. So you see that morigen is that kind of vessel. Makri le Rova Librei Veromi le Kroi Adodi. Rava was teaching his son. He was teaching his son Psukim, and he raised in the course of his teaching what seems to be contradictions in the Psukim. Ksiv, it says Vayitain David La Ravno. We had these two psukim above. Ha'ketzat, goyve mikol shevet v'shevet chamishim. We saw these psukim raised above with the different numbers in them. So it says that he collected from each shevet 50, shehein sheish me'ois, which each shevet being there 12 of them would equal a total of 600. Well, but akati kashion adodi. But still, there is a contradiction. Hosam kesef hachazov. You can see by looking at the stars that we have above and our markings, you can see we've dot underlined the two different expressions. One pasuk indicated gold, and the other pasuk indicated silver. So they're two different materials. So how do you resolve that? Elo hachi komar goyve kesef b'mishkal sheish me'oy zov. He gathered silver. How much silver? An amount of silver that would equal the value of 600 pieces of gold. As we go on in the Gemara, we see a quote from Kuf Yud Beis Omid Beis. It says that when the Mishkan was set up, Kodshim Kalim Necholim B'chol Machne Yisrael. We have on the side of our Gemara a Nosei heading with a structural note as well. The diamond is featured. Shlovim B'divrei Rav Huna. These are stages within with regard to Rav Huna. Lefaresh Hodikotoni Demishiku Ukama Mishkan Kodshim Kalim Necholim B'chol Machne Yisrael. That when the Mishkan was set up, the Kodshim Kalim, the light level sacrifices, were eaten all over the Machne Yisrael, the camp of Israel. Omar Rav Huna, the Mishnah had said that Kodshim Kalim Necholim B'chol Machne Yisrael. So Omar Rav Huna B'chol Mekoymos Yisrael. Now that would sound like wherever Jews were, that if a Jew would step outside of where the population was located, he could continue eating sacrifices, kodshim kalim. Omar le Rav Nachman le Rav Huna. Rav Nachman asked Rav Huna, machnos b'midbar lo havoi. Is it so that there were no machnos in the midbar? There were no camp divisions and halachas regarding camps in the midbar? V'ha Tanya, you have the following Tanaic source. Kishem shemachne b'midbar, kach machne b'Yerushalayim. Just like there was a machne in the midbar, there was also a machne breakdown with regard to Yerushalayim, and this will be explained immediately. Yerushalayim l'harbayis, from the walls of Jerusalem to the Temple Mount, that equals Machne Yisrael. That's classified as the Machne Yisrael with all of its ramifications. Mehar Habayis Lishar Nikanor Machne Levio, from Har Habayis, from the beginning of the Temple Mount till the gate, the Nikanor gate, that constitutes Machne Levio. Mikan Velech, from the within the Shar Nikanor and inwards, that is the gate leading into the Azorah, to the courtyard of the Beis Hamikdash, equals, that's Machne Shechina. V'hein hein kloim shema midbar. The Machne Shechina in the midbar was represented by the curtains that surrounded the Mishkan. So, what do we see from all of this? We see that the concept of Machne applies in the midbar as well as in Yerushalayim. So, just like in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, Kodshim Kalim were limited to Machne Yisrael, to be eaten within the confines of Yerushalayim, so too in the Midbar there would be a limitation of eating it within the camp of the Jews, and not wherever a Jew happened to be located, even if he walked outside the population. Elo Emo, what is meant by, what did Rav Huna mean to say? B'chol Mokoim Machne Yisrael. That means that even at the point that the Mishkan was folded up in anticipation of moving along in the travels in the Midbar, that's called Siluk Masos, even at that point, they would continue eating from the Kodshim Kalim. That's B'chol Mokoim Machne Yisrael. That's where when they started traveling, the korbanos would not become pasul. Then we ask, well, pshita? But it seems to be obvious. He's eating it amongst the Jewish people, even while they are moving. So Mao Ditema, without Rav Huna's teaching, I might have thought, if Salu Biyotse, that they become unfit as a problem of Yotze. Yotze is leaving the required area, that once they start moving, that's already considered they're in movement, so they're no longer within their confines. Just like we say in the Beis Hamikdash, if Kochim leaves the Azara, it's called Posul, so Psu Yotze, so too with regard to the meat that the Jews had from their sacrifices when they started moving. It's left its area. Komash Malon, that's what Rav Huna is telling me, that it's not Nifsal B'Yotze. The Gemara asks, well, V'Eimo Hochinami, well, maybe you should still insist on, yes, in fact, it is Nifsal B'Yotze. Omar Kro, V'Nosa Oyol Moyed. Afopisha Nosa Oyol Moyed Hu. The Pasuk tells us that even though it's in movement, nevertheless, the classification of being called Oyel Moed is still in place. And therefore, even while in movement, it's still said to have its characteristic of a camp. Tanya, Reb Shimon Choy Omer, Oida Cheres Hoy Sosham, Ezras Noshim Hi, Velohoyu Oinshim Oleo. Rashi points out toward the bottom of the page, Oda Cheres Hoysa, Machne Revius, there was a fourth camp, Chaluko Meharabayas U Meazora, different, a distinct camp, different from Harabayas and the Azora, Velohoyu Oinshinaleo, Alanichnus Lobetumo, Baseches Kalim, and entrance upon into this area called Ezras Noshim, the Ezras Noshim would not be considered punishable upon entering while Tomei. So, and Rashi points out, Masel's Kelim Meforish Mahi Chalukosu Mehar Habayis. There it's pointed out what its distinction is from the rest of the Har Habayis. Ubashilo, the source goes on to say, Lo Hoyu Elo Shnei Machnois Bilvad. In Shiloh, there were only two Machnois. The Gemara asks, well, Hei Minayu Lo Havei, which one was missing? Which one was not there? And the Gemara, as it continues, will deal with this particular issue concerning what, in fact, is meant by Shiloh having Shnei Machnos. The Gemara, by the time it gets to the top of Kuf Yud Zayin Omid Aleph, we will see that this has a meaning other than that which we think it means right now. But as far as today's Shiur is concerned, with that we conclude our Shiur for today.